This is The Antidote by Amani.
Welcome to Antidote, the culture and politics podcast for millennials and Gen Z, where we search for the cure to today's viral social issues. This, of course, is a very special episode because it is election week in the United States of America, and not just any election, but one that has been dubbed the most important election of our lives. So, of course, there's no better guest to join us in this historic moment than a woman whose own political career has been nothing short of historic, and who herself has become one of the biggest threats to the president himself, apparently. And that is the Congresswoman from Minnesota, Ms. Ilhan Omar. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here with you, Amani.
So, Congresswoman, obviously tomorrow is going to be just such a momentous day that a lot of years and years of hard work and organizing have been leading up to. And first of all, I'm curious where you're at. Like, how are you feeling, especially because you have been at the center of so much of the chaos that's been unfolding online over the past few weeks? How have you been handling everything? And just how are you feeling going into this?
I'm feeling good. I think, you know, for almost 4 years, we've been in a resist mode. And it's been really pleasant for, you know, the last month leading up to, you know, tomorrow, election day, to have engaged in a process of creating hope and mobilizing people for the possibility of voting for change that will get us a step closer to the things that we've been fighting for.
Are we feeling optimistic about the outcome?
I am. You know, I'm always an optimist, but I believe you get what you organize for. And I believe that we've done the work in having the difficult conversations, in exciting people about casting their ballot and recognizing that their vote is their voice. And I believe that we are going to see just how powerful that voice is tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. And I love that you put it that way, is that we get what we organize for. Because, you know, at the end of the day, none of this really is sorcery, right? This isn't just something that comes out of thin air. It is the result of a lot of, not just organizing, but I feel like a lot of sentiments that have been building up. In our case, I feel like it's the result of a lot of pushback against misinformation, miseducation that we have been dealing with since the first election. And I'll be honest with you, I think you're a little bit more optimistic than I am. We have no idea what this week is going to look like, but for myself, from my own personal experience, I have learned the hard way to never underestimate American racism. And I feel like the current political climate right now, I don't know what to expect. But of course, we know that regardless of what happens tomorrow, it really is the fork in the road for our country. And just so much is going to change depending on what it looks like.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. This is not sorcery, right? And we can't, as we've all learned, underestimate, you know, racism and how that motivates people to fight against progress for our country. But what we have to remember is that in the last month and a half, for states like Minnesota and others who've had early voting for the last, you know, 44 days.
The turnout's been amazing.
Turnout that has been historic.
Yeah.
And we know, right, that the electorate is more Democratic. And increase in turnout has always meant a positive result for Democrats. Mm. And so I am optimistic because we are seeing the results of the work that we have put in show itself in the numbers that are coming out from election officials. And, you know, I know that for me, it's been a priority to make sure the president doesn't get close to winning Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm very optimistic about what the outcome of those results will be. But I'm also optimistic about Texas and many other places and what the turnout will result in.
No, that's an amazing point, because I think the voter turnout is the huge silver lining behind this, because obviously it's kind of lit a fire under people's asses that they need to be registered to vote. They need to use that right, because, you know, as Congresswoman Ayanna told us in our last episode, that it is an act of resistance. And I just, the way that the cards are falling right now, and especially because of all of the rhetoric around the elections, especially coming from the president, almost discouraging people from finding a way to get that vote in, and just making people feel disempowered from this election, even reflecting what the electorate wants, especially when we do have a sitting president who claims that if ballots aren't counted the right way, that he's going to dispute it and possibly not leave office. I want to ask you, what do you think has been the biggest challenge to this election cycle that we've faced? What has been the biggest hurdle or pitfall that we've had to deal with? Has it been the misinformation this time? Has it been interference like 4 years ago? What's your impression?
I mean, I think all of it. You know, I think that there is such a hurdle for a lot of people to exercise their vote. And it's not something that you would expect in one of the, you know, longest existing democracies, right? We should have progressed into a space where voting is easy and accessible. But because people recognize that there is so much power in our vote, they have built systems to render us powerless. And, you know, I think really about the hateful rhetoric that is not only coming from the president, but the whole Republican Party, and how they have targeted, right, immigrants, Muslims, Black people, and to recognize that, like, their biggest fear is what happens when we actually get the actualization of the Browning of America. And the sheer number, really, of Americans who make up the diversity of this country that are aging in to the electorate, and how many people are becoming new citizens, and how that will shape this election is not only exciting, but it's going to be ironic. to have their loss of power be the result of their greatest fear, which is the Browning of America.
I love that. No, and especially because you bring that up, I do want to say that it is a full circle moment for me, that this is the first time we get a chance to sit down and have a conversation since I was running for Congress. And at that time, we were having so many conversations about the adversity of being in the political space as Brown people at this time. And you were such a tremendous source of support for me with the violence that I could not have even imagined, the volume of which was coming my way as a result of that race. And so I'm curious, with you as your position as an immigrant lawmaker today, how will your job be impacted depending on who gets into the Oval Office after this week?
I mean, not just me as an elected, but as an individual, as a member of the American family, things will, in living in a place that's more inclusive, and at least not having, right, the leader of the country create division and hatred for folks who carry the marginalized identities that I carry. Mm. And which in turn will result in my ability to just focus in representing and pushing forth for change instead of being in a space of resistance and defiance and, you know, what we've all been doing, just fighting for dignity and for our humanity to be uplifted and recognized.
Absolutely. So obviously we don't know yet how tomorrow night is going to go. And we also don't know in the days after the election how things are going to go, because I don't know why do I have a kind of like my spidey senses are tingling that shit is going to hit the fan after November 3rd. And we have to brace ourselves for what's to come.
It's a good place to be. You know, I spend a lot of time talking about the complacency that exists with so many people and the fact that we are not willing or allowing ourselves to be complacent to the reality of this election being rigged, to the reality of the results not being in our favor, to the reality of there being unrest and violence is a good thing, because that means we are, you know, engaging this moment in a way that is proactive and not reactive, right? There are a lot of people who are putting plans and resources together to assure that our elections are transparent and safe. There are a lot of people who are thinking about what happens to guarantee a peaceful transfer of power. There are a lot of people who are thinking about what it means to keep our communities safe from the threats of white supremacy violence. And so it is actually reassuring that your spidey senses are because when that's not happening for every single person in the United States, then we have a problem. The fact that people are worried, the fact that people are anxious is a good thing, because with worry and anxiety, we plan and we activate ourselves to try to address what is causing us the worry and what's causing us the anxiety.
So sorry to interrupt, but I have to make sure that you are empowered to vote by any means necessary. That's why we're partnering with Lyft to make sure that transportation is not a barrier to the polls. On election day, use code 2020VOTE to get discounted rides to the polls, no matter who or what you vote for, because we want to make sure that your voice is heard. For more terms and info, go to lyft.com/vote. Okay, now back to this fire episode of Antidote. So on that note of the plan, we're sitting here with really one of the most impactful members of Congress that our generation has been able to experience. And it's not every day that we get to sit and, you know, speak with someone with a voice like yourself, especially at such a momentous time. So for those listening, Congresswoman, I would love for you to lay down the plan for us, right? If we are staring at this fork in the road right now for our nation, can you let us know, depending on which direction we as a country end up going, what is next? What is the plan? What do we have to prepare for?
You know, I don't even want to go down the line, right, of what loss for us could mean and how we prepare for that, because that's really like a place of negativity that I don't want for people to get stuck in, for people to spend
We don't even want to put that into the universe. Right. We're not trying to manifest that.
Get into existence. Let's not our precious sanity or whatever is left of it. So let's spend time on what happens with a change in administration and what that could mean if we have a president that refuses to transfer peacefully. And, you know, I know, you know, I get a lot of flack for, you know, my criticisms of systems of inequality in our country, and people think because I criticize systems of inequality that I must have criticisms of all systems. Mm. And this is a time where I believe that we have actual systems and institutions that have the strength to withstand what we think would be the inevitable challenge to the existence of our democracy. And there are, you know, people who are much more in a place to think about doomsday than I have been, that to them it's clear, right, that there are many scenarios that could take place. And in some of those scenarios, we are disenfranchised because the Republicans have been really good at creating the environment for them to succeed if there was a challenge in the courts for the election results. So, you know, you've got states that have to ratify the electors in their states that are controlled by majority Republicans or have Republican governors. We also have a Supreme Court that is going to soon.
That's kind of being hijacked right now, but that's beside the point.
There's a clear coup taking place of the Supreme Court, and so all of that really creates an environment where the results of the election could be overturned or rigged. But my belief, and the belief of many, is that, you know, two things are most likely going to happen. Because people are so worried and so vigilant that they're not just voting for the top of the ticket, they're voting down ballot. And many of these state houses that are controlled by Republicans are controlled with the mere majority, and that we might actually see a shift of control in these state houses. And that is really the best outcome for those of us who want to see the system work in the way in which it's supposed to work. And then I think secondly, is that we are successful in blocking the current nominee to the Supreme Court. And that in itself results in having, you know, not a complete coup of the Supreme Court, and that we have justices still on the bench that might be more adherent to the Constitution and their oath and not ideology. And so I say those two things because, as an optimist, right, like that
those one are, of us has to be
right, like those are the things that I'm counting on happening to continue to be optimistic about what is possible, because absent of that really gets us to having a conversation about doomsday. And I'm not a person that spends a lot of time thinking about the tragedies that are going to take place, but I'm somebody who spends a lot of time about how we work our way out of tragedies.
Absolutely. And I think that alone is a testament to what that reality could look like for people like us, right? That we don't even want to risk thinking about it yet. And I think that alone says a lot about what's at stake and what's on the line here. And I love what you're saying. It sounds to me like what you're saying is that the work only begins tomorrow night. No matter what, we're really just getting started, because it really is all these other facets of the government that we do have a say in as well that directly impact our everyday lives, at a very individual and at a very local level. And it seems like the current political climate, you know, obviously people get caught up in the presidential elections a lot because the presidency is, of course, the biggest position, the most visible position. But this breakdown that we've all witnessed, especially that has come to light as a result of this crisis, I think it's shown our failure as a society to be civically engaged enough, at a level adequate enough to have a healthy democracy, at least.
No, that is so true. You know, we don't spend a lot of time thinking about how powerful municipalities and state houses are and how much they actually impact our lives on daily basis than Congress and the president does, right? Many of the policies that Congress is debating and implementing, the same with the presidency, have a long-term impact on our lives, and they're not as immediate as what the city council or your state representative and state senators and your governor, the decisions that they're making. And, you know, I believe that this is going to be an election that is important enough for us to have numbers really that our country has never seen before. And, you know, Rashida said something the other night that has resonated with me, which is we have to have results that are too big to rig. Right? Like our win on whoever is on the ticket, whether it is, you know, on a presidential level, whether it is on a congressional level, whether it is on a state level or municipal level, all of the results have to be big enough for it not to be rigged, but also big enough for them to carry the momentum, right? That will have whoever is in positions of power to believe there is a mandate for them to carry out policies that are going to transform our nation and get us the real progress that we need, and allow for the movement on the outside to retain its momentum, to push for the change we need to see. You know, so I am worried that people are only focused or are willing to accept a small win and, you know, just enough to get us, right, a certificate of elections, but not enough for us to not worry about what happens after the third, and not enough for us to worry about whether the responsiveness that we want from the new administration or the leaders that we are electing in this moment of change to take place. And so, you know, here in Minneapolis and in Minnesota, we are mobilizing ourselves in mass numbers because we believe that that vote is going to not just be a voice in creating change in who represents us, but also it's going to be the voice that carries us to the changes we want to see.
So, Congresswoman, I know that the time that we have with you is limited because you have a very, very busy week ahead fighting for all of us. There's a lot of people counting on you. So before we wrap up our conversation, I did want to get your thoughts on, of course, you have been at the center of a lot of the conversations around these systems, and especially around the dismantlement of these systems of oppression. And of course, a lot of young people today, including your own daughter, who's a badass, by the way, a lot of young people today question whether the vote will carry us to the dismantlement of those systems. And I'm curious what you think is the antidote to that.
The antidote to that is work. You know, I think people are counting on young people and people of all ages to be pessimistic about what is possible, and which will result in them not working, right? To change the outcome of the election, to change the outcome of the policies that are being debated, not only on a national level, but also on local level. And so we have to work as hard in electing people, in voting and mobilizing people to vote, as we do in fueling the movements that have created a social awakeness in our country. You know, Isra and I debate this all the time, whether, you know, it is possible for there to be something after the mobilization to vote, or on the other side, whether there's something possible after the mobilization for people to socially get involved in the movements of today. And it's always a yes from me. I think that both of those things run parallel to one another. And if we are mobilizing for change, but we don't have people in office to create that change, then we are working to no end. In the same way that if we organize to create change with our vote, and we don't have, right, the mobilization of the electorate to support that change when somebody is in office, then we've elected people who are going to be ineffective. And so both of those things need to be combined. And as an organizer, I acutely understand that, because I've seen that in my own city. We've mobilized for change, for racial justice in our city. And with that, we elected people who would be responsive, you know, in positions of power. And they have been, right? We've seen changes in ordinances. We've seen changes in the way in which our cries are translated in legislation. And, you know, we can continue to do that on a national level. And I hope that the way those two things fit together is something that is understood by everyone, because I know that the leaders who started the Black Lives Matter hashtag acutely understood that. The young people who are carrying the Sunrise Movement, who are fighting for environmental justice and fighting for a breathable planet, understand that. And I know that Muslims who have been fighting for representation understand that those of us who now get the honor and the privilege of representing the Muslim community can't be effective if we don't have people continuing to mobilize our communities for the change that we want beyond the identity representation. And so everything is interconnected, and no work can be seen or done in silo.
So by all counts, it seems like with what's facing us as a democracy, that election night is simply the starting line and right, not the finishing one. No. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, thank you so much for joining us on The Antidote. It's nothing short of an honor, truly.
Thank you. It's been an honor to be here with you.